Among the many challenges in Afghanistan is the country's high rate of illiteracy. Part of the U.S. military and NATO operations in Afghanistan include teaching Afghan soldiers and police recruits how to read. Noah Schatzman is a contributing writer for Wired magazine and the editor of the national security blog Danger Room. He joins us to discuss what's involved in this literacy effort. He recently wrote an article on the subject entitled, "If Afghan Troops Can't Read Cat in the Hat, This War Is Screwed." That's on Wired.com. Hello, Noah. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You know, it reminds me of that expression from Rumsfeld, you go to the war with the army you have, but who knew they couldn't read, huh?
Yeah, right.
Now, you know, imagine this scenario. You've got Afghan national troops. They're pinned down. They need some air support. And they want to avail themselves of the U.S. military machine and all of its technological marvels, if you will. But they can't read a map. And that's the scenario, right?
Right. Or here's another scenario for you. We want to pay the Afghan troops, and we want to make sure the money gets to the Afghan troops, right? But we can't just hand bundles of cash over to their commanding officers, not in the corrupt society that is Afghanistan. So instead, we're trying to pay these guys electronically, right, and deposit it into their online bank accounts. Well, they can't even read the welcome screen to get into those online bank accounts. So there's a whole host of problems associated with having a kindergarten or less level of education.
So they can't. They don't even know they've been paid. In some
respect. Exactly. There are hundreds of troops actually that protested to Lieutenant General William Caldwell, who's the head of the training mission in Afghanistan, complaining about not getting paid. And then it turned out that they'd been getting paid all along. They just couldn't read their bank statements.
Of course, the unintended consequence is the idea is to stop corruption. But when you pay people in such a way that they can't, you know, it's completely obtuse to them, there's more opportunity for corruption, I suppose.
You got it.
All right, so let's talk about the big picture here. What is the literacy rate in Afghanistan is not so good anyway, right? Overall, literacy rate is what?
I don't know the exact literacy rate, but it's bad, 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 bad. I know that of the 243,000 police officers and troops in Afghanistan, only 18% of those have a third-grade level education, and most don't even have a first-grade level education. So you can imagine, you know, how women's education has been treated in Afghanistan over the years. I would guess that the overall literacy rate is even less.
All right. So it's, you know, we're talking in round numbers, you know, 70-plus percent who can't read at all. And when we're talking about illiteracy here, we're not talking about, I mean, this is fundamental illiteracy, profound illiteracy, if that's the term. Right.
Yeah, we're not asking these guys to read Ulysses or Proust or something. We're just asking them to, you know, figure out how to get paid and how to tell East from West.
So, you know, I sort of get this with women because the horrible way women are treated there and not educated there. But boys are educated, are they not? Why are they not learning to read?
Well, apparently they're not being educated.
Not,
I don't know
right.
Afghanistan as well as I'd like, but I have been to rural Afghanistan for a time with the Marines. And, you know, look, the economy and everything else down there was at a, you know, biblical level. You know, I felt like I'd stepped into about 1000 BC with mud huts and no schools or anything like that. Really, the only difference between 1000 BC and 2010 was the motorcycles and the Kalashnikov rifles.
Well, this points out you know, a fundamental problem, which maybe we hadn't thought about when we talk about nation building in Afghanistan. If you have to start at this fundamental level, you got a big job, right?
Yeah, or you've got to change your notion of what nation building means, right? I mean, you know, Afghanistan's been a country for a long time, and, you know, it did have peaceful periods. So, you know, you just can't expect to you know, set up you know, France too in the middle of Afghanistan. You got to have a really different definition, a more flexible definition of what a nation's going to be.
So, NATO forces, NATO-led forces, are actually teaching literacy skills. And what languages are we talking about here? Are we talking about Dari or Pashto or?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay, and so who's doing all this teaching? Who's paying for this? How's this happening?
So, as near as I can tell, recruits are going to a 15-day course, a crash 2-week course to get them the basic reading skills, just to be able to, you know, tell A from B and East from West. And it's happening in relatively small numbers, but those numbers are getting bigger. And, you know, they're hoping to get everybody, they're hoping to get 100,000 people into continuing education in about 9 months. It's a staggering number, and it's one of a number of staggering challenges that NATO forces have to face while training these guys up. Think about this for a second. They need 56,000 more troops by November of next year to sort of hit their goals of what they think they need to police the country. But because there's so many washouts, they're actually going to have to recruit three times that number, 140,000, to get to those 50,000. There's only 140,000 people in the whole Afghan army right now. So they basically have to recruit the equivalent of the entire Afghan army in the next 14 months in order to meet their recruiting goals.
And they're washing out because of literacy issues or other issues?
All kinds of issues. There's literacy issues. There's drug issues. You know, it's pretty common for Afghan soldiers to show up to the fight stoned, and NATO is not taking as harsh a view of that as they would with their own troops. But, you know, there's only so much hash and so much opium they can take from a soldier.
So the drug situation is something that the military is obviously very aware of in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Are they... I mean, I suppose if you drug tested every potential recruit, you wouldn't have a very big army there, would you?
They drug test them, but they drug test them once, and it's not, you don't flunk out by failing a drug test. You know, if there are too many people who fail the drug test in a particular unit, perhaps NATO trainers go to the commanding officer and say, "Hey, look, you got a problem here. You really got to try to clamp down on this."
So they've changed where they set the bar when it comes to drugs because of the cultural issues. Is that what it boils down to?
Absolutely.
Well, so we've got and I'm putting quotes around this, a fighting force that is stoned and can't read.
Correct.
Okay, so.
But on the other hand,
I'm feeling good about being in Afghanistan right about now. I'll tell you.
But let me just say this: on the other hand, unlike in say Iraq, you know, Afghan forces are plenty ready to fight. Okay, and no one's really accused the Afghan army of running away from a fight, which is what the case was in Iraq. So they do have you know, a sort of esprit de corps that is very helpful, and you know, they have participated in and contribute to a lot of different, you know, really serious military missions. But in addition to the, they do have a training issue and they do have a size issue, and they've got some major logistical challenges too. They don't have the logistics, they don't have the reconnaissance forces, they don't have the equipment to work on their own. And so that's another big challenge for the U.S. and for NATO, is to try to, you know, get them the gear and to sort of set up the supply chains they'll need to work on their own. But that's much further down the road. First, these guys have got to learn to read.
They can't read the manuals for all this gear. But I mean, that's poses an interesting dilemma. Would you rather have a fighting force that is, you know, tenacious and good fighters, but stoned and unable to read, or would you rather have, you know, the Iraqi equivalent, which where they don't even show up? I don't know. I guess probably the former, right?
Yeah, probably the former. I mean, the other thing I do have to say too is, you know, having spent some time with Afghan National Army troops, is also they can be invaluable for, you know, for dealing with the locals, and you know, I mean, they deal with the locals 100 times better than Western forces do.
I guess that goes without saying. We're not very good at that, are we?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it varies a lot. But, you know, these guys, you know, it's their country and it's their culture. And so, you know, they're a lot better at getting information from the locals and addressing their concerns, that sort of thing.
Well, I guess, you know, I'm thinking of, you know, I'm looking at this through the U.S. prism, be all that you can be or whatever. This could be, you know, an enticement for people to join the armed forces. You can learn to read, or is that not enough?
I mean, I think there's also the get paid part. I think that's a big enticement.
Right. But now, you have to be able to read to get paid. So there's the conundrum, right?
Right. But here's actually a paradox that actually they finally sort of unsnapped, which was they were paying people, and, you know, not an inconsiderable amount of money. But for a long time, the Taliban was paying people more. So you took a pay cut if you went from the Taliban to the Afghan National Forces. Now, that's changed recently, and now the pay scales are about even. But still, you know, I'm not sure we want to have the same pay rate as the Taliban. You know, you'd like to think that being a professional soldier pays slightly better than being a scrappy guerrilla.
You would think.
Yeah.
And you get literacy courses. Now, yep. I'm guessing nobody's learning English here, right? That's out of the question. We're just trying to get them to be able to read, you know, Dari or something, right?
Yeah, there's a small group of people that are also learning English because that's helpful, too, in terms of interfacing with Western forces. I know that some of the there's a nascent Afghan Air Force, and it's very useful for them to learn English since English is kind of the lingua franca of the air traffic control system. So it's good for them to know it. But I don't think there's like a wide-scale English language recruitment program, at least not one that I'm aware of.
I hope the pilots of the nascent Afghan Air Force are able to read, right? We can assume that?
I think you can assume that, yeah.
There's a few important manuals and checklists that they might want to get a hold of.
Yeah.
When you read this, it takes you back and makes you think about the big picture here. Potential trap which we face ourselves in, and the size and scope of the problem. Do you share that?
Yeah, well, I think it's also like defining what success means over there. And, you know, if success means, 80% college enrollment, we're going to be there for a really long time. If success means, keeping the militants, degrading them enough so that they come and cut a deal and pledge to stay out of our hair and, not blow up any more of our buildings here in New York City, that might be good enough.
Yeah, it's it's mind-boggling that we're at that level, that it's that fundamental. It makes you think about, the term quagmire comes to mind when you're teaching literacy.
Yeah, and so the question is, do you scope the problem in that way, right? I mean, is that our mission there, to teach literacy, or is our mission, really to go after a small group of guys and then try to boogie out?
Yeah, is the Army supposed to be doing this? Is this the appropriate role for armed forces, nation building, teaching of reading? I think that's an important question that we haven't really grappled with.
Yeah, but, the thing is, right, is that we've so degraded the other instruments of our national power, right, like the State Department, USAID, the Agriculture Department. All these departments used to play a vital role in promoting U.S. interests abroad. But over the years, they've all atrophied, their budgets were all cut. And so you're left with the military kind of holding the bag and doing all these jobs that really kind of like, almost Peace Corps kind of work.
All right. Thanks, I gotta go. Noah Sachman is the contributing writer for Wired Magazine. Appreciate your time.